Record. Okay. Hey, good morning. So we are starting back in the story of the moving of the Ark to Yerushalayim. We spent a couple of weeks looking at this parak before we took our prolonged break from the end of August till now. September, October, yeah, it's 2 months. It's not too terrible. It's less than our usual break, so we're okay. So I just wanted to kind of recap where we were at, do a quick review for everybody's benefit, and then kind of pick up a little bit on some of the, I'd call them loose ends or unresolved questions that we still have open for to us. If you remember the story, David decides to move the Ark to Yerushalayim. Just to put a context to this parak for a second, something which we haven't really addressed at length, but I think it's important and will become even more important in the chapters to come. But one of the big questions is why David chooses to move the Aron now. Here it says, "V'yosef od David et kol b'chor Yisrael shloshim aleph v'yakam v'yelech David v'chol ha'am asher itom mibalei Yehuda la'alot misham et Aron ha'Elokim." David gathered together a large gathering of 30,000 people, and he went to bring the Aron from Balei Yehuda or Kiryat Yearim to bring the Ark. Aron ha'Elokim asher nikra Hashem 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 Tzvakot Yoshev Yerushalayim alav. To bring the Ark with that carried the Kruvim, or carried God's name on the Kruvim, and to bring it to Yerushalayim. In this parak, it doesn't exactly tell us why he makes that choice. I would assume, and in the lack of any more information than this, I would assume that it is somehow connected to what we read in the previous parak. Namely, I'll go back one parak. The previous parak, the tribes of Israel, after the death of Ishbosheth and the fall of Saul's kingdom and the end of the civil war, come to David with an attempt to kind of unite the kingdom together, all the tribes together. Vayavo kol shiftei Yisrael, I'm going back one parak, parak A. Vayavo kol shiftei Yisrael, they come to David, they say, "We want you to be our leader, you are already our leader, you've always been." And so David kind of unites the kingdom, and part of that effort to unite the kingdom is what we read about in starting with Pasuk Devav, Vayelech HaMelech Manashav Yerushalayim. David goes to Yerushalayim to move his capital from Hebron to Yerushalayim and make his capital and make Yerushalayim the center of the kingdom of Israel. And we spent a good deal of time talking about the context of why Yerushalayim was so important. Beyond the religious and historical significance from Sefer Bereishit, Yerushalayim has for David a very powerful political message. It's no man's land. It's in between Shevet Yehudah and Binyamin. It unites the kingdom together. It's perceived to be a kind of neutral ground. And in that way, David is able to kind of bring all the tribes together under one banner in a kind of a national capital rather than a tribal one. And for the first time, you really see that transition from a tribal division amongst the in Israel to a sense of being unified under one kingdom, one banner, one sense of one identity. And that's critical. That's critically important for the future and for the establishment of a kingdom. At the core of it, that's what a kingdom is, right? It's a national leadership rather than tribal, or the shoftim, which was a form of tribal leadership, meaning regional. And so David conquers Yerushalayim. In the aftermath of the conquest of Yerushalayim, we saw a couple of the issues related to David's household. We talked about Vayikach David od pilakshim menashim Yerushalayim acharei bo mechevron. After David comes from Hebron to Yerushalayim, begins to expand his household, children that are born in Yerushalayim. We'll talk about that a little bit more. And then we have two battles with the Plishtim. Exactly the time frame of these two battles with the Plishtim, we also addressed, but more or less they are in the context of either right before or right after his battle with to open Yerushalayim as the new capital of Israel, and then and essentially push the Plishtim back into Eretz Plishtim. Ve'yasta mikain ve'yachat Plishtim migevad bo'acha Gaza. So by the end of Perek Hey, David has clearly established himself in on a national level as the leader of Israel, established Yerushalayim as the capital of Israel. There's international recognition of his capital, of his stature. We saw a pasuk earlier or in the Perek, right after he conquers Yerushalayim. Just going back for a second. Right, this alliance with Hiram from Tzor in the north, which probably happened after the battle with the Plishtim, but nonetheless, this alliance with a political power, meaning that David's influence is now growing. And so Yerushalayim is emerging as the new center of activity for David politically. From there, the end of the internal threat of the Plishtim, the establishment of political ties with neighboring countries, David in Yerushalayim is now growing into a major power and a major center. No surprise, therefore, that the next perek we read is Yosef David kol b'chor Yisrael shoshimalef v'yakam v'yelach David etc. v'yirkavu et aron elokim to come to take the ark to Yerushalayim. So on the basis of what we have just read, if I ask the question, what's the motivation behind David's moving the ark to Yerushalayim? I think the answer is fairly simple at this point. We're going to make it more complicated eventually, but fairly simple at this point, which is that Yerushalayim is really, David wants Yerushalayim to be the center of all activity. He wants it to be the center of the political activity of his kingdom. He wants it to be his capital. He wants it to be perceived as the place, the seat of his kingdom. Again, not to draw into the tribal divisions of Yehudah and Benjamin over the years. Right? He's always been identified with Shevet Yehudah. Now it's time that he be identified with the totality, the klal of Am Yisrael. For that, he needs to establish Yerushalayim not only as the political center of Israel, but also as the spiritual center of Israel. You can't separate the spiritual and the political in the context of Malchut Yisrael. And so it's the right time and the right context to bring the Aron to Yerushalayim. So right now, that's all we have. In other words, to see the context of Perek Vav in its relationship to Perek Hey, David, after establishing Yerushalayim as that center, decides to make it not just a political and military center of Israel, but also a spiritual center for the people. For that, he needs the primary symbol of the spiritual anchor, which is the Aron. Mizbeach is still in Givon. The Mishkan is still in Givon. But the Aron has been sitting in a tent and hiding in Kiryat Yearim for all these years. It's time to bring that kind of spiritual anchor to the political capital of Israel, to Yerushalayim. For now, that's all we have. Is that clear? I mentioned this as a kind of introduction to what's going to happen, to what's going to come in the next couple of chapters. But we need to set that stage, and I think we did not really address this question in our study of this parak. We kind of jumped into the what happened with Uzzah, but we didn't address the question of why David is bringing the Yerushalayim, bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim. That's relevant now. We will expand on that question as we move forward. But for now, we're going to take it at face value that from Perek Hey to Perek Vav, Yerushalayim is the subject of discussion. Yerushalayim political center, Yerushalayim military center, and now Yerushalayim spiritual center as we move the Aron to Yerushalayim. Okay, so let's go back to what we had spent some time discussing, which was the tragedy of Uzzah, and ultimately the two attempts to bring the Aron to Yerushalayim. the first Aliyah, which failed, and the second attempt, which was more successful. We spent a good deal of time comparing the two events, trying to understand what went wrong the first go around, and in that regard, what was fixed the second go around. So we talked about, for example, the change in how the Aron was carried. We saw Uzzah, starting with Pasuk Gimel, Vayarkivu et Aron Alekim. This is the first attempt, the tragedy of Uzzah. Vayarkivu et Aron Alekim al Agala Chadasha, Vayisu'u mi Beit Avinadav Asher Begiva, Uzzah v'Achyo b'nei Avinadav Noagim et Agala Chadasha. They put the Aron on a new wagon. They brought it from the house of Avinadav. Uzzah and Achyo drove the wagon. Vayisu'u mi Beit Avinadav Asher Begiva, Aron Alekim. That pasuk is kind of repeats what we saw in pasuk Gimel. I'll come back to that in a second. V'David v'chol Beit Yisrael misachakim lifnei Hashem v'cholatzei v'roshim v'kinavot v'nevalim v'tuvim v'gmananim v'mitzaltzalim. David and all of Israel, they are dancing and playing before God. There are all kinds of instruments of cypress wood, etc. They are literally, it's a major national celebration. And I suspect that it's part of the reason for this national celebration is not just because we're dealing with the Aron, but because we're dealing with Yerushalayim. It's part of it is the sense that they're kind of completing the circle of what Yerushalayim is going to become, and so there's this extraordinary celebration. They get to Goren Achon, Vayishlach Uzzah el Aron Elokim, Vayochez bo ki shemtu abakar, the oxen began to stumble, Uzzah grabbed hold of the ark to steady the ark or to steady himself. God was angry, smote Uzzah on the spot, Vayakeu sham al hashal, Vayamot sham im Aron Elokim. That set a major tragedy reminiscent of the story of Nadav and Avihu. We talked about the Nadav and Avihu comparison, Avinadav, Nadav and Avihu, kind of a contraction of both names. And then David decides to park the Aron aside until he can figure out what to do with it. And so it never gets to Yerushalayim in this case. It ends up going to Beit Oved Edom Gitti. David Beit Oved Edom Hagiti. Then 3 months later, Vayeshev Aron Hashem beBeit Oved Edom Hagiti Shlosha Chodeshim Vayivarech Hashem et Oved Edom et Kol Beito. 3 months later, David hears that Hashem had blessed the house of Oved Edom, meaning that there was a kind of a change in atmosphere. Maybe God was angry at the time, and he's no longer angry. But clearly, David saw this as a sign. It's time to try again. But he doesn't just try again. He has to change the mistakes that were made the first go around. And so this is where we kind of pick up what changed between round one and round two. And there are two versions of the story, one in Sefer Shmuel, one in Divrei Hayamim. And they emphasize different sides of the changes that are implemented. In Sefer Shmuel, what is clear, what is evident, is that there's a very dramatic change in atmosphere. So Vahikit Sa'adu, they take the Aron, and Vahikit Sa'adu Nasei Aron Hashem Shishat Sa'adim Vayizbach Shor Mari. Every time those who carried the ark went 6 paces, they sacrificed an ox and a fatling, and they brought korbanot. V'David Mechaker B'choloz Lifnei Hashem, and David was dancing before God with all of his might. V'David chagur eifod bad, and David is wearing garments, linen, meaning garments that look like the garments of a kohen, eifod bad, with a linen eifod, garments of the kohen gadol, but Yom Kippur style kohen gadol clothing. So very very focused on avoda, on the korbanot, on the sense of sanctity of the place, the Aron that represented God's presence. V'David b'chol yisro ma'alim et Aron Hashem b'tru'a u'v'kol shofar, bringing the ark together with the sounds of the shofar horn that is blown. V'ya Aron Hashem bat Yir David, and the ark manages to come to Yir David. I told you I'm going to skip the piece about Michal for now. That'll be our next chapter. V'yavo et Aron Hashem v'yatzig oto b'mkomo b'tocha'o, they place the ark in its place in a tent, which David had prepared for it. Vayal David alot lifnei Hashem u'shlamim, and again, bringing all kinds of offerings and bringing a portion of those offerings to the people. Vayechal David me'alot ha'olad, he blesses the people. Vayevarech et ha'am, and he gives them food from the offerings. Vayechalek l'chol ha'am l'chol ha'mon Yisrael, l'me'ish v'yadisha l'ish chalat lechem achat v'eshbar achat. He gave every person piece of the cake and the bread and all of the food related to the korbanot. So in the atmosphere, in the change of atmosphere between round one and round two, we find a change in the nature of the instruments. So instead of playing all kinds of musical instruments of brass and wood, etc., we find only one musical instrument that is mentioned, one that is typically associated with Mikdash-related activity, namely the shofar. Number two, we find instead of the sense of mesachakim, of playing musical instruments and just in general playing and celebrating and dancing, find a much more focused avodat Hashem kind of style dancing. David mechaker b'cholos lifnei Hashem, David who's dancing with all of his might, but in the constant presence of God, that sense that they are in God's presence. And he's wearing big day kuhuna, not just celebratory malchus type clothing. And David is at the center of activity. He's not letting this by chance be driven by the people. If you look back at the first go around, it says, V'David v'cho beit Yisrael mesachakim lifnei Hashem. Right. David is, and all of Israel are playing these instruments before God, whereas in the second go around, David is at the center. Right? David mechaker, David v'chol beit Yisrael malim et aron Hashem. Vayigad l'melech David, vayelech David, vayal et aron Elokim. V'David ויציגו את אהרון ובאור אשר נתן לו דוד, ויעל דוד, ויחל דוד. David is clearly at the center of this activity. What's not mentioned in Sefer Shmuel, but is clearly mentioned in Sefer Divrei Hayamim, is the other change in how the Aron was taken, which was a change in the mechanics. So I'm going to jump to Divrei Hayamim for a second, and there, when David hears that the house of Aved Edom had been blessed, Vayikra David litzadok ul'evyatara kohanim. David called over to, I'm reading the chat, one second. Not going to the mikvah. Not quite sure where mikveh entered into the conversation. I don't know how mikveh entered into the conversation anywhere. Janet, you posted something, but I'm not sure what the context of going to the mikveh is in this parak. I don't think it's mentioned in either context. But chime in if you want to elaborate. Vayikra David at Tzadok ul Evyatar, Kohanim, he calls over Tzadok and Evyatar, and the Leviim, Uriel, etc. Vayom alehem, atem rasheh avot leviim, hitkadshu atem, you need to prepare yourself, unless that's what you meant by hitkadshu. Janet, maybe that's what you meant, that he tells them to prepare themselves, purify themselves, v'achechem ba'alitem et aron Hashem elokei Yisrael alachinoti lo, and bring the ark to the place that I have prepared it. So instead of David saying, you know, kind of, or David being the centerpiece here, it seems to emphasize the fact that he turns to the Leviim and the Kohanim to prepare. And he says explicitly, Kilim mibarishana lo atem, because the first time we brought the ark, we didn't involve you. And therefore, paratz Hashem elokeinu banu, ki lo drashnu kamishpat. Therefore, God made a breach upon us, for we did not seek him. We did not move the Aron properly. We didn't do it according to halacha. So the priests and the Levites sanctified themselves. They carried the ark as they were instructed, on their shoulders, bearing it in the staves of the ark. And then he places the Levium there to play all of the different instruments, and the instruments here are identified as the same as the instruments in time one. Right? There's a discrepancy between the two versions. Nonetheless, that is our, so the big emphasis in Divrei Hayamim with the big change is the fact that instead of placing the ark on a wagon, they carried it on their shoulders, and it was the Kohanim that carried it rather than the children of Avinadav. So I'll come back to Shmuel for a second, and to summarize, if we had to summarize all of the differences between, let's call them Aliyah Rishana and Aliyah Shniyah, to borrow a term from a different context, right? What are the major differences? So go around number one, they placed the ark on a wagon. It was carried by the house of Avinadav, children Peretz and Uzzah, which were, Uzzah and Achyo, the children of Avinadav. Avinadav, L'chorah, from the house of Yehudah, it's unclear who, but certainly not from the Levium. The all kinds of musical instruments that were played, David is a part of the entourage of the players of the musical instruments, and in the end, the atmosphere is one of shira, one of song. In fact, I think I shared with you the song, right? The mystery of these two psukim. Feel free to chime in, because I'm doing a lot of talking unless you chime in. The mystery of these two psukim, v'yakivu et arono lukim ala galah chadasha, v'yisum mibet avinadav asher begiva, v'uza v'yachyo b'nei avinadav nohagim et ala galah chadasha, v'yisum mibet avinadav asher begiva, im arono lukim miyachyo lech lifnei aharon. So these two psukim that were at the beginning of the first go-around, we talked about this a couple of shiurim ago, they are complicated because they seem to repeat the same information. They placed the ark on a new wagon, and they carried it from the house of Avinadav. Uzzah and Achyo, sons of Avinadav, were driving the new wagon, and they carried it from the house of Avinadav, Asher Begiva, which we just already said, with the ark. What do you mean with the ark? They carried the ark with the ark. It makes no sense. So what we had suggested was that this is written in a kind of poetry, a shira, and that this sentence that appears twice, Vayis'u mibet avinadav asher begiva, which appears twice in the text, is actually a kind of a refrain in a musical back and forth. So read the psukim without the refrain. They placed the ark on a new wagon. Uzzah and Achyo, sons of Avinadav, drove the new wagon. With Uzzah and Achyo went with the ark as it went, and Uzzah with the ark and Achyo before the ark, meaning those are the technicalities, and interspersed is this refrain of the chorus of this shira, Vayis'uhu mibet Avinadav asher begiva, carrying the ark from the house of Avinadav in upon the hill. So the whole atmosphere here is one of song and celebration, and the emphasis being on this wagon that they placed. Right? Twice it says that they placed the ark in this wagon. And overall, the sense of kind of the whole experience of placing the ark on a wagon and driving it to its new home in Yerushalayim. Go around number two, very different atmosphere. They're carrying the ark on their shoulders, but katef yisau, which is according to the mitzvah of how the ark was to be carried. The Kohanim and Levim are the only ones touching the ark, which is in accordance with the mitzvah of how it's supposed to be. The shofar is the Allah lakim shofar, betua Hashem b'kol shofar. The shofar is the instrument that accompanies korbanot. Every seven steps, again, a symbol of sanctity, and David is at the centerpiece of all of the activity. All of this in order to demonstrate that David, quote unquote, learned the lesson from the first go around. More or less, that is where we left off before we took our break. Yes? Kind of a bit of a summary of where we're at. However, we're not completely out of the woods yet. in the story. And the reason is because initially we asked the question, what the punishment doesn't seem to fit the crime. We started on this exploration of what happened because we were concerned or disturbed by the depth of the tragedy compared to what seems to be a relatively innocuous act. The ark begins to slip. Uzzah reaches out to stable it, right, to stabilize it. And we compare the analogy to how somebody doing Hagba in the Sefer Torah beginning to fall, you're not going to go running for a talus to grab the talus so that you don't touch the cloth of a falling Sefer Torah. Right? If the Sefer Torah begins to fall, you're going to grab it and hold it, even if it means you're going to touch the cloth, which we try not to do, right? Because you don't want it to fall. Poor Uzzah, what did he do? The ark began to fall, and he reached out and grabbed it. So we spend a good deal of time shifting blame from Uzzah to David, right? We kind of shifted the whole arena to the major decisions that were being made here, namely to drive it on a wagon instead of on carrying by the shoulders, to have Avinadav transport it instead of Kohanim, the atmosphere of celebration instead of the atmosphere of reverence, musical instruments instead of a shofar. All of these were decisions that I assume were made by the leadership of the people, namely by David and his council. And so in the end, we could identify significant issues with the first go around as far as the ark was concerned, but we leave ourselves with a gaping hole, which is, poor Uzzah, right? Poor Uzzah, right? This poor guy sitting with the ark with David and made all the decisions and all the wrong decisions, let's assume for the moment, because of all of the celebration and the atmosphere, etc. He forgot about some basic halachas about carrying the ark on the shoulders. And poor Uzzah is sitting at the wagon and it begins to fall and he pays the price, where it seems to be, at least at this point, that we've placed all the blame on the shoulders of David. So that might be not so good for David, but it's even worse for Uzzah. This poor guy, what did he do wrong? You know, at the end of the day, Isha Sheyechta, the person who commits the transgression, is the person who should be held accountable for it. And if all of the problems lie with David, then how come it is Uzzah that seems to be at the center of the story? So I haven't answered that question yet. That's been on our minds. So I want to come back to this song and suggest to you that maybe we are we're missing a piece of the story, and that maybe Uzzah is not so innocent here. After all, this isn't Tanakh, and in Tanakh we have to assume that if God punishes somebody, it's for a crime that the individual committed. That necessarily doesn't hold, in other contexts, but certainly in the world of Tanakh, that is certainly an assumption. And this song is at the centerpiece of Uzzah's preparation for travel, and so we need to come back to it and try to understand what maybe was going on with Uzzah, Achyo, and the house of Avinadav. Because at the end of the day, the song has two two points of emphasis. And namely, that they placed the ark on a wagon. We talked about that a little bit. And that the ark was driven from the house of Avinadav by Uzzah and Achyo. In other words, and that's twice. Right? Agalah Chadasha is written twice, the house of Avinadav is written twice, and Uzzah and Achyo are mentioned twice. If you just read the psukim, Vayakivu et Avon Olakim al Agalah Chadasha, v'Uzzah v'Achyo b'nei Avinadav noagim et ha'Agalah Chadasha, v'Yis'u mi Beit Avinadav, it's written twice, and the identification of who's traveling with the ark. Uzza and Achyo drove the new wagon with the ark. Went Achyo, Uzza with the ark, and Achyo before the ark. So the whole context here seems to be about Uzza, Achyo, Avinadav, and this new wagon. And that's how the story began. So even if we made the mistake and of not giving it to the Kohanim, that would have been David's choice. And even if we made the mistake of using the wrong musical instruments and having the wrong atmosphere, that would have been David's choice. But the song sets up the framework that somewhere along the line, Avinadav and Uzza and Achyo had a decision in this process that held them accountable for what took place. So I want to suggest one additional problem with this moving of the ark that may not have been David's fault at all, but that absolutely might have been somehow accountable at the house, the level of the house of Abinadab. And it comes back to this wagon. The reference to the Agalah Chadasha, the reference to this new wagon, this is not the first time this reference appears. Why are they so bent on placing the ark on a new wagon, on a Agalah Chadasha?
That's what the Plishtim did when they sent the Aron back.
100% correct. That's exactly what the Plishtim had done when they sent the Aron back. So if we jump back to the Psukim in Sefer Shmuel, here we have the Agalah, the Shira at the beginning. Ve'akivu Aron Elokim El Agalah Chadasha. If I look at the Concordancia to the phrase Agalah Chadasha, it will point me to no, we're going to do this manually because I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to find it the fancy way. So we're just going to do this the normal way, which is to go back to Shmuel Aleph, Perek Hey, I believe. This is Perek Vav. Right, this is where the Plishtim had the ark after the fall of Shiloh for 6 months or 7 months. They get together in a conference and decide they need to get rid of this ark because it's wreaking havoc everywhere it goes. And so they decide to send it back. So what is the suggestion? Yata k'hu ve'asu agala chadasha achat u'shtei parot alot asher lo ala lehem ol. ועשיתם את הפרות בעגלה, ואשיבותם ביניהם מאחורים בבית, ולקחתם אותו מהשם ונתתם אותו אל העגלה. We'll take a new wagon, take two cows that are no yoke come upon them, milking cows, right? Mothers, nursing mothers, for other reasons, which are not an issue right now. Take the ark and place it on this wagon. And then send it back, and together with a couple of other things, like a couple of idols that they threw with it, as a kind of an appeasement. When it comes back to Beit Shemesh, a couple of psukim later, Beit Shemesh kotzim k'tzir chitim be'emek v'yisu et enehem v'yu et aron v'yismachu lir'ot. Right? They see people in Beit Shemesh, they saw the ark coming, they lifted up their eyes, they saw the ark, and they rejoiced. V'yismachu lir'ot. Celebration. This wagon came to the house of Yeshua from Beit Shemesh, and they brought all kinds of offerings, and the Levim took the Aron off the wagon, and they placed it on a stone, and then the rest of it was another tragedy of great depth, and 50,000 people. Bayach b'anshei Beit Shemesh, ki le'u b'aron Hashem, bayach b'am shivim ish, chamishim alef ish. This is a terrible tragedy. They decide to send the ark to Kiryat Yearim. So from there, there's a direct connection to our story, but the connection is not only that we're picking up the ark in Kiryat Yearim to bring it to Yerushalayim, But the connection is also the Agala. The Plishtim had sent the Ark back in an Agala Chadasha. Correct? That's how it started. Asu Agala Chadasha. And so when the people decide to bring the Ark from Kiryat Yarim to Yerushalayim, Vayarkivu et Aron Elokim el Agala Chadasha. Now, I saw somewhere in one of the Mefarshim, I don't remember which one, actually made the assertion that not only did they place the Ark on a new wagon, they placed the Ark on an old new wagon. Meaning they placed the Ark on the same wagon.
The same Plishtim wagon? Yeah.
Correct. There is at least one of the Mefarshim that I saw. See if it's here. It's not on the source page because this was relatively recent.
And I ask you, where is the old wagon, or was there one?
Hold it for a second. I'm going to come back to that. That's a very good question. I'm going to come back to exactly that question in a second. I'm looking for the Im Aron Elokim. No, I'm not going to find it so quickly. But I saw at least in one of the somewhere the reference that they used. Not only did they use the original wagon from Beit Shemesh, someone once wanted to suggest this pasuk was Im Aron Elokim. What did they take with the ark? They took all those crates of idols that the Plishtim had sent back with the ark, and they threw that in there also. That far, I'm not willing to go. But they did that. But the notion that they did used the same new wagon that was sitting there in Beit Shemesh in the house of Kiryat Yarim from the days of the return of the Ark makes sense, right? The Ark came back to us in this wagon. We're going to transport it in this wagon. There's a certain logic to that. Beit Avinadav very excited to take the Ark, put it on this wagon, and send it back. So Dina asked the right question, which is, where was the old wagon? Meaning, want to clarify your question?
Yeah, sure. Where was the original wagon? What happened to that?
Which original wagon are you referring to?
Well, it had to come somewhere from the Plishtim. Did they take it from, where did they take it from? From a ground, from a wagon, from... What did they do?
Are you talking about when it returned from the land of the Plishtim, or are you talking about in Chumash, when they traveled with the Ark in the Chumash?
Actually, both. I mean, there had to have been
the wagon from the Plishtim to the Beit Shemesh was a new wagon. They built it. They took a new wagon that had never been built before. They put the Ark on that new wagon, had a cover to the Ark, and they sent it on its way. Assuming this is the same wagon, it's been sitting there in Kiryat Yarim for all of these years until the Ark is ready to travel again. The question that I thought you were asking was, what about the wagon? What about the mode of transport in the days of the Mishkan, in the days of the Midbar? How do they travel with the Ark in the Midbar?
That was sort of what I was asking, right? Because it had to have come from a wagon somewhere.
Right. So the answer to that question is, under no circumstances whatsoever would they ever have placed the Ark on a wagon, period. Placing the Ark on a wagon was a no-no. Why was it a no-no? Because the Torah clearly says, Bakatef Yisau, the Ark was carried on their shoulders. You couldn't put the Ark on a wagon. You weren't allowed to. You don't take the Ark and stick it on a box. You don't take a Sefer Torah and stick it on a truck to transport it from one place to another. And when you want to transport a Sefer Torah from one place to another, you carry it with a chuppah and a whole Hachnasa Sefer Torah entourage. Just stick a Sefer Torah in a truck and transport it. And we're talking about the Aron HaBrit, Hashem Tzvakot Yosheva Kruvim. We're talking about the Aron with the Kruvim. You don't have to transport it by sticking it on a wagon and covering it and sending it on its way. The Torah says very clearly, Bakatef Yisau, it had to be carried on the shoulders. And that clearly was part of what we had talked, that's what we had identified as clearly one of the mistakes that was made. But I want to argue that it goes even further than that. Because in order to place the ark on a wagon, which the Plishtim had done initially, and now they were repeating, you had to do something else, which was in violation of the ark. Now, the Plishtim would never have understood it, because the Plishtim had no frame of reference by which to understand anything about Jewish life and the Torah and the Torah's laws. But there was clearly an instruction in the Torah beyond just the fact that the ark had to be carried on the shoulders of the Kohanim that would had to have been violated by the Plishtim initially and by the house of Avinadav now, the moment they placed that ark on the wagon. Besides the fact of how the ark was to be carried, just placing the ark on the wagon required them to violate a fundamental law of the transportation of the ark. And that, for that, we need to go back to Sefer Shemot and look at the psukim of how the ark was built. This is Shemot Perek Chaf Hei, the creation of the Mishkan, starting with Pasuk Yud. V'yasu Aron Atzei Shittim, to make an ark out of cedar wood, Amatayim V'chetzi Arko, Ama V'chetzi Rochbo, to whatever its dimensions are, 2.5 cubits in breadth, cubit and a half in height, v'ama v'chetzi komato, v'tzipito to zahav toho mibayit mechutz, inlaid, overlaid with gold, v'yasito alav zer zahav saviv, with a gold crown around it. V'yatzaktu lo arba taba'ot zahav, and you will cast 4 rings on the ends of the ark. What are the purpose of the rings? V'netata al arba pa'amotav, to place these rings on the 4 feet or corners, you will make stabs or poles out of cedar wood, and overlay them with gold. What is the purpose of these badim, of these poles? What do you do with the poles?
You stick them through the rings and then you carry it.
Yeah. You place the poles into the rings al tzalot Aaron, laset et Aaron b'hem, in order to carry the ark. So you have the ark, rings, and you have these 2 long poles that carry the ark with it. B'taba'ot Aaron yu abadim. These poles shall be in the rings of the ark. Lo yasuru mimenu. They may not be removed. Ever. Manatata Aaron el Aaron et ha'eduta asher eten elecha. You will place the testimony.
What shouldn't be removed? The rings?
No, the staves, the poles.
Oh.
Poles of the Aaron can never be removed. And you will place the ark, the law, into the ark. You'll place the luchot, v'asita kaporet, and upon the top of the ark, you'll make this kaporet, which is a kind of gold cover. That was a seat for the kruvim. V'yasita shnayim kruvim zahav mikshet taseh otam mishnei k'tzot ha-kaporet. And the kruvim are from one end to the other. Each end of the kaporet sat these 2 kruvim, and the 2 kruvim had wings, and these wings, they represented the shechina, they represented the malachim. These wings had their wings facing up, porsei knafayim lemala. Okay, covering their face. And you place the kaporet on the ark. And that becomes, the ark becomes the means by which communication between God and Israel would take place. I will meet you there. I will speak to you from above the kaporet, from between the two kruvim. Now, if you compare this to all of the other kelim of the Mishkan, for example, the Shulchan also had poles. You place these poles, overlay them with gold, and place them in the Shulchan to carry the Shulchan with them. Or the menorah also. Or all of the other kelim had staves or poles. However, only with regards to the Aron do we read the pasuk that says, Lo yasuru mimenu, that the ark, the poles were not allowed to be removed, period. In fact, the Gemara states, Gemara in Yuma, Hamasir bade ha'aron loke, if you removed the ark, the poles from the ark, that was a violation of a biblical commandment for which there was malchus, because the pasuk says explicitly, lo yasuru, they cannot be removed. The Rambam continues and clarifies this. The Rambam is a very interesting Rambam because it's in the context of the laws of the Aron that were unique. He also mentions our story. So the Rambam writes, Be'eshim ulechinet ha'aron mimakom l'makom. When the ark was transported from place to place, ein molechinato lo al behema velo al agalot. You were not allowed to place the ark on a wagon or on an animal. Ela mitzvah linato lakatef. The mitzvah was to carry the ark. Ulefisha shechach David unisao al agala, because David forgot this halacha and he transported the ark on a wagon, nifratz peretz buza. Therefore, the outbreak against Uzzah took place. Again, the Rambam seems to imply that the fault lies with David. I'm going to come back to that question. Ela mitzvah l'nasor l'katev, sh'nemar ki avodat ha'kodesh alehem b'katev yisau. The mitzvah is to carry the ark on the shoulder. So obviously you need those poles to carry the ark. But it goes one step further. I'm getting a chat question. Okay, Phyllis asked, how did the plishtim carry it? I'm going to come back to that question in a second. I believe the ark poles were first removed by the plishtim, because Israelites, when they carried the ark into battle, they were certainly carrying it on their shoulders. The plishtim, I'm assuming, they didn't carry the ark. I'm assuming they transported it on a wagon with all of their other spoils of war. But to put the ark on a wagon, you have to take the poles off. It won't fit on the wagon with those poles on. That's exactly the point, that the prohibition against removing the poles is directly connected to the requirement to carry the ark. If I stick the ark on a wagon to make it fit, I have to remove the poles. So the question is, where's the chicken and the egg? Which is the more critical piece? Is the more critical piece that you place the ark on the wagon, or is the more critical piece that you had to remove the poles? And if it's to remove the poles, what's the significance of those poles in the first place? That's where all of this is going.
How could David have just forgotten?
How could they have just forgotten?
No, David. How could David have just forgotten? It's like important thing.
That comes back to what we said initially, which was that the atmosphere of celebration and joy and kind of everybody was just kind of going with the flow. So Chazal said that he forgot two halachas. Mm. One that had to be just Kohanim and the other that it's... I agree. I think that there's something more here. And especially because it's Uzzah who pays the price for it. I think the fact that they put it on the wagon was reminiscent of the mentality that was borrowed from the plishtim. They took the poles out of the ark in order to put it on the wagon. And my question is, so what? Why are the poles so significant? But the Rambam goes on to say this explicitly. Kishenosim oto al hakatef, nosim panim paneged panim. When you carry the ark, you had to carry the ark so that the people faced each panim o panim, achoyem lachutz. Right, so the people carried, they're facing the ark, not facing away from the ark. You didn't turn your back on the ark. And they had to be very careful that the poles, the staves, did not slip out of the rings in the that held them in place. Shamasir echad min abadim min atabaot loket, because if you remove even one of the poles from the rings apart in the side of the ark, there is a chiyuv malchus, there is a violation of a Torah prohibition. So the Rambam clearly articulates that this is a direct violation. And that's how the halakha is formulated.
Is that a punishment? Is that like...
Malchus is a rabbinic... Malchus is a form of punishment the Torah establishes for any violation that's a lav. The different hierarchies of Isurim in the Torah, a lav is a basic prohibition. Then you have Isurei Kores and Misa B'dei Shemayim and Misa Bezdin, right? Capital crimes of various nature. But otherwise...
The guy had a capital punishment.
Right, but how it moves from a corporal punishment to capital punishment is a separate issue, because it kind of gets further, because the purpose of, once you remove the ark, that's one violation, but then he actually grabbed the ark, which is a separate violation, so that becomes a whole different issue. But I'll come back to the technicality of that in if not today, the next week. But clearly, the what I'm suggesting to you is that this emphasis on placing the ark on a wagon, which would have required them at the outset to remove the poles from the ark, that was a decision made by the house of Avinadav, the decision of Uzzah and Achyo. That would have been a decision in the method of transportation. Whether those poles were put back when they came back from the plishtim, we don't know. I'm assuming they were. But to place it on the same wagon would have required them to have that same mentality that they had when it marched back from Eretz plishtim, which is take the poles off because they're not important, and stick the ark on a wagon and let it transport and kind of in full view, rather than see it as an object that needed to be carried by the poles. So, well, I want to kind of open this conversation. This is sort of the segue into the opening of the conversation, which is, so what? Like, why are these poles so significant? What do they represent in the context of the ark itself? Why does the Torah not require permanent poles or staves for the Shulchan, does not require it for the Mizbeach, and the Mizbeach was much bigger, does not require it for any of the other utensils. They were all transported on wagons, right? So the Levim would go into the Mishkan, they would take the Mizbeach apart, they would take the Shulchan, they would take the menorah, they would take these objects on their poles, they would put them, right? Even if they didn't carry them on wagons, even if they carried them on poles, but once they were in place in the Mishkan, they could take the poles out. The poles didn't have to stay. The Aron, with the exception of one opinion, the Ebenezer, but everybody else agrees, the Aron, those poles remained attached to the Ark, even when the Ark sat in the Kodesh HaKadoshim in the Mishkan itself.
Well, Rabbi, is one of the reasons because the poles stuck through? They could see, people outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim could see the poles.
And there is a Medrash about that in the Second Temple. That's not a reason, that's just a reality. There is a medrash that says that in Bayit Sheni there weren't walls to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and so the poles of the Aron stuck through. But that would not have applied to the Mishkan.
So could it be so that the Aron was portable in terms of getting out quickly?
So now, once we entered into, so there's a bunch of Rishonim or Mefarshim that kind of weigh in on the question as to why the Aron's poles were so central to to the point where it could not, they weren't allowed to be removed. So I put on the source page.
Can I ask just for a minute to clarify? These poles vertical or are they horizontal?
Horizontal. They were used to transport the Aron.
That nobody would actually touch the Aron.
Sure you've seen pictures of this, I'm sure, of the carrying the ark between two staves and the kind of taking it along. There's a very interesting scene in, There's a very interesting scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark, which actually had a very interesting consultation. There was a Jewish group of consultants on that movie. and very learned. There's a lot of truth to a lot of the pieces of that film. I think we talked about it when we learned the story of the Eretz Plishtim, and they looked at the Ark, and I think I compared it to the scene at the end of the movie where they kind of all disintegrate. But there's a scene where the Nazis are putting the Ark in a crate, and you watch them remove the poles from the Ark in order to get it in this crate. And literally, you can pull the poles out, and the Ark goes in this crate, and then they crate it up. And that's exactly what we're talking about. The moment you place the Ark in a box, you have to pull the poles off. And the question is, why is that so significant? What do the poles here represent? So I want to show you three different approaches in the Rishonim. And they're very different in their nature, but they all share a common frame of reference. I want to start with Sefer Chinuch, actually, which I think is probably closest to what you said before. Mishorsheha mitzvah, lefi she'aron mishanen haTorah, the Aaron is the source of the Torah and the learning of Torah. V'hu kol ikarenu chvodenu, everything we are, our primary essence, our kavod, our relationship with God, it all stems from the Torah that sits inside the Aaron. We are obligated to observe and to conduct ourselves with every manner of honor and majesty to the extent possible. For that reason, we were commanded not to remove the poles of the ark from it. It's very interesting here. Pen niyet tzrichim latzet im ha'aron l'shum makom b'miut, lest we need to leave quickly. Remember, the Mishkan was portable. So if they need to be portable, they need to pack it all up and transport. V'ulai mitoch ha'tirda v'achipazon lo nivdok yafeh liyot badav chazakim kol ha'tzarich. And if the Aaron's staves were not permanently attached, if they were just sitting on the side, then as they're quickly moving the ark, they'd stick the poles inside the ark, could mean that they wouldn't be attached properly. They wouldn't be hooked in properly. And then as they're traveling, as they're walking, the ark could fall. That's not nice. But if the staves, if the poles are there, they're always ready to move it. So then you don't have to worry about it. It's not going to fall because you never have to worry about the fact that the poles were not properly attached. I think I told you the story the very first time I ever saw a Sefer Torah fall. Did I tell you that story? It was in Calgary. I actually wasn't there, so I didn't see it, but I heard about it. There was a Shabbos morning. I was away actually on vacation, but it was a Shabbos morning where they put the Sefer Torah back in the Aron after Kriyas HaTorah, and literally as they started Kaddish, in the middle of Kaddish, right before Musaf, the Sefer Torah that had just been put back in the Aron literally just rolled out of the Aron and onto the floor. It just kind of just rolled. The base of the Aron was waist high, and it literally just rolled out and fell on the floor. It was a major event in Calgary. I think it was my second or third year there. What had happened was the Aron in that shul had a carpeted area where the Sefer Torah were, kind of in an oval, and then the front of it was a marble shelf. And the Sefer Torah had been put in the corner spot. So one leg was on the carpet and one leg was on the marble, but it wasn't secured. There was no belt and it wasn't properly secured there. And so he thought it was, closed the ark. And as Kaddish began, it kind of began to slip and it literally slid out of the Aron and onto the floor. Whole place was in total shock. And I wasn't even there because we were away. But that led them to build certain physical structures in the Aron to make sure it wouldn't happen again. So one of them was they put a lip in front of the carpet, between the carpet and the marble, and the other was to put a chain around each of the cubicles for the Sefer Torah to be in. All of those changes were what I would describe as exactly what the Sefer Chinuch is describing here. Okay, the poles inside the ark, so that if you ever have to move it quickly, you don't think twice and you don't have to worry about whether the poles are properly secured and the Aron is going to fall. The last thing in the world we want is the Aron to fall. So that is the Sefer Chinuch's perspective. In and of itself, I don't necessarily think that it has a kind of a major theological issue other than out of kavod to the Aron, we don't want the Aron to fall. Okay. Come back to Rav Hirsch in a moment. Rav Hirsch is the one that's most often quoted. Let's take a look at the Meshech Chachma for a second. Meshech Chachma is a much more contemporary twist to the story. Meshech Chachma writes the following. With regards to the Mizbeach, the Torah's instruction is that the Badim have to be in the Aron, but only when you carry the Aron. And similarly with regards to the Shulchan. I'm moving the size of it around so I can see, because I've got your video pictures on my screen also. Similarly with the Shulchan, it says that you have to place the Badim in the Shulchan when you carried it. The poles have to be attached permanently. That's significant. Medrash clearly states that each of the three items that we just described, the Mizbech, the Shulchan, and the Aron, had a kind of a crown, the zer, that went around, a decorative crown. And they each represented a different crown in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, Keter Torah, Keter Kehuna, Keter Malchus. Aaron Ramez the Keter Torah, Shum Munach L'chol HaRatzalikach. The crown of Torah is there for anybody who wants to come and learn Torah and come and take it. It's a very good post Simchas Torah drasha. Vine, HaTalmid Chacham Tzarich Sa'ad L'tumcho. Person who wants to devote his life to learning Torah, he needs somebody to support that effort, because it's not going to happen by itself. He needs somebody wealthy to provide the financial support so that he can learn Torah. Community needs to support Talmud Chacham so that he can continue to learn. And that's what the Badim represent. The Badim, the poles, they represent holding the ark, supporting the ark. So if the ark represents Torah, the poles represent support of Torah. That support needs to be perpetual, needs to always be there. You can't support Talmud Chacham today and not support them tomorrow. I'm going to take the poles out of the ark. It represents the ceasing the support for those who are engaging the Torah in Torah study. So this needs to be a permanent relationship. You have those who are studying Torah and those who are providing the support for them, the Aron and the Badim in the Aron. So says the Meshech Chachma of Meir Simcha Cohen of Divinsk, very contemporary a kind of perspective on what they represent. Pshat? Debatable. I would argue that I think this falls into the category more of drash than of pshat, but nonetheless, a perspective to share. Third option, and we're going to take a different approach to all of these, but I just want to throw out sort of the classic to see what they all share in common, and then where we go from there. Rav Hirsch is probably the most famous of all the interpretations as to why the ark needs the staves or the poles permanently. This is a very interesting perspective. There's a lot of also contemporary nuance to it. But then Aharoni writes, the poles of the ark misamlim et hayiud v'et ha'tafkid laset et ha'aron u'ma shebetocho el michutz l'tchumato. The poles represent the ability and the purpose of those poles to carry the ark and what's inside it outside of its domain. Meaning the ark lives inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim of the Mishkan, but it's possible to take the ark outside of the domain of the Mishkan and carry it. Kisha'a sha'a tzricha lakach, when the hour requires of it. Mitzvat liyasuru abadim, this mitzvah of never removing the poles, mivaseret lidorot ta'amet, that conveys a message to generations to come. Shezot ha-Torah, this Torah, v'tafkida, and its purpose, einam mutnim dafka be'admat ha'aretz shebet ha-Mikdash omed aleha. The Torah and its message is not necessarily tied specifically to the sanctity of the land of Israel upon which they were there. Halav shelo yasuru kesemel le'itlut haTorah elokit b'tnaim mekomiyim. This prohibition of not to remove the poles represents the lack of dependence between God's Torah and the physical place where they are. Mitbalet od yoter al yedei nigud al kli kodesh acharim. That's in direct contrast to the other instruments of the Mishkan. Michud ha-shulchan v'ha-menorah, shelo ne'amar behem b'badehem lo yasuru. Right? The shulchan, I think he meant the shulchan and the mizbeach, because I don't think the menorah had badim, but nonetheless, they didn't have such a restriction. Muva b'zeh rayon. This conveys the following idea. Omnam shulchan Yisrael u'menorat Yisrael chayu Chayav Hagashmiyim b'chol hekefam, right? The Aron, the Mizbeach, the Menorah, the Shulchan, they represent the physical existence of the nation of Israel. V'chayav Haruchaniyim, and even its spiritual achievements in that regard that are connected to the land of Israel. Enam efsharim ele b'yishivat ha'am al admat ha'aretz. They are only possible if the nation of Israel is sitting on its land. As a nation, the physical ability of the nation of Israel to express itself on a national scale is only possible in the land of Israel. Avalokin Torah Yisrael. But Torah is possible even outside of the land of Israel. Torah is not dependent upon land. Torah is portable. Torah can be carried from place to place. And therefore, says Rav Shimshon Lefol Hirsch, Germany, 19th century. Therefore, the Torah is the Badim in the Aron are permanent, so that it takes the message that you can move this everywhere and anywhere at any time. Torah is always transportable to any community, to any place. Okay. Three different possibilities to what the Badim represent and why the Torah restricts removing the poles from the Ark. The Meshech Chachma, they represent supportive Torah. Sefer Chinuch, they represent the transportability, the ability to transport the Aron quickly, because the Aron has in it the Luchos and we don't want them to fall. So we need to physically be able to transport them effectively. And of Hirsch, he says, because the Aron represents Torah, we want to convey the message that Torah is portable to any community at any time, anywhere in the world. Okay. I don't know about you, but this leaves me with a blank, because I don't have anywhere to put Uzzah and Achio into this connection. They're not removing the ark because they are trying to say that the Torah is not permanent or that the Torah is not portable. They're not removing the poles because they are removing the financial support of the Talmid HaChachamim. And they're not removing the poles out of a lack of kavod to the Aron. On the contrary, they think they're giving it more kavod. So I'm left with a blank. But we're going to adjourn here and we're going to pick this up next week. There is a common denominator between all three of these interpretations. And that is?
That the poles need to stay with the...
That's a Torah prohibition, restriction. Oh. That's clear. In terms of their interpretation of that mitzvah, there's a common approach to how they perceive the aura.
That's portable.
A, it's portable. Clearly, it's portable. And what does the aron represent?
Torah.
Say that again.
Torah, right.
The aron, in all three of these interpretations, the centerpiece of the aron are the luchos that are inside it, the Torah. And because they carry the luchos, everything we do about them is out of kavod or out of the portability of Torah or the support of Torah. In all contexts, the Torah is at the center of the ark. However, there's another way to look at the ark. And the other way to look at the ark is not the ark was the seat of the luchos, and everything about the ark is about the luchos that are inside it. That's one way to look at it. But there's another way to look at it. And I would actually argue that in the Torah, the emphasis is not on the luchos. In the Torah, the emphasis is on the kaporet and on the kruvim. If you go back to the mitzvah, the psukim in the Torah, you place the badim in the ark, you place the aron, the luchos in the aron, and then you make the kaporet and the two kruvim. And at the end of the day, you come to Pasuk Chabet. What's this all about? V'na'adati l'chasham, so I can meet you there. V'dibarti itchami ala kaporet, and I can speak with you upon the kaporet, between the kruvim, which are on the aron ha'edut. And it's quite possible that the purpose of the aron is to be a seat for the kruvim and the mechanism, the conduit for communication between God and Israel. The kruvim are the centerpiece of the aron. And the luchos are inside the aron because the kruvim are on top, not the other way around. It's not the kruvim that guard the Torah, it's the Torah that gives meaning to the communication between God and Israel through the kruvim. So if I make the centerpiece of the aron, the kruvim and the kaporet, and not the luchos, now I have a different message. Now I have a different message, but now I need to understand how the badim fit that message. So for that, we're going to have to continue this conversation next week. We are out of time. But that's where I want to go with this, which is that the aron represents the kruvim, and the kruvim are at the center of this conversation.
The kruvim are the cherubim.
Yeah,
that's at the top of the vertical pole.
That's our goal for next week, is to pick up from this discussion, and we will take it from there.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.